Committee on House File 2337, the Omnibus Jobs and Tax Relief Bill, called to order. And I welcome back our colleagues from the House and my colleagues from the Senate, as well as staff and commissioners and those folks that are here to testify. It's always good to see Chair Davids, even after his suspicious comments about the fat lady singing. But glad he clarified. Oh, the fat chairman. Glad he clarified that comment. Clarified just as it was going out. Smart thing. This would have been a very uncomfortable evening had he not clarified. Well, we asked folks to come to testify this evening relating to TIF provisions in the bill, and we have a list of testifiers. Let me just say that we are not planning to take votes tonight. What we are planning to do is to hear your testimony and your recommendations about provisions in the bills that are similar or different relating to your community's TIF proposals, and so we'd like you to address your comments, please, to the differences between the House and the Senate versions and what your recommendation would be for us to proceed. And with that, there are some handouts for members in your packets. We have the same and similar non-budget items comparison. We have the letter from the City of St. Cloud and a letter from the City of Pine Island. And if Chair Davids, would you like to make some nice comments tonight?
Let the show begin.
And Commissioner, would you like to make a comment or two?
Madam Chair, I'm just happy to be here. I'm glad we finally got started after the late start, but I'm just no opening comments for me. Thank you.
Like me, you can hardly wait to start talking about taxes at any time, even at 7:30 in the evening. With that, then, we will ask Ms. Haney, Kathy Haney, to come and testify related to the Dakota County TIF provision. And so then after Ms. Haney in the Dakota County, we'll hear from Oakdale, and then Bloomington and Apple Valley. After that, we've got testimony planned for Patty Nauman, Metropolitan Municipalities, and then Jen O'Rourke, League of Minnesota Cities. And Mr. Bo Berenson and J.D. Burton may be asked to testify as well. And in light of the hour, hopefully, folks, again, please be specific to the differences between the House and Senate bills and your recommendations for us. Ms. Haney, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Haney. I'm a lawyer at Fagry, Baker & Daniels, and my client is the Dakota County Community Development Agency. They are the entity that is in charge of the development of the TIF district in West St. Paul. And that may give you a little bit of a sense of what I think of as one of the things that's unique about this project, and that's the fact that you have a county that is putting together the TIF district, and the County Board of Commissioners is on record as supporting the project, along with the City of West St. Paul, and the mayor was here to testify in both the House and Senate when we presented the project. So it is not real often that we have both a county and a city that are in support of a project. The difference, there's two differences between the House and the Senate bill. In the Senate, there is a 15-year extension to the redevelopment district in West St. Paul. In the House, there's a 5-year extension. In the House, there was some uses of TIF funds that were deleted from the original language. On the second part of it, the deletion of the use of the TIF funds for various, I think it was recreational purposes, other things, we're fine with that. We just...
Sorry to interrupt. I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. Members, we are talking about Article 4, and we are on page 22 in the side-by-side comparisons in your big folder, your big black binder. So we're on Article 4, Section 13. Yep. Here, Ms. Haney, just to clarify, Article 4, we're on page 22 of the side-by-side comparisons, and we are talking about a Section 7 in the House bill and Section 13 in the Senate bill. All members with me now? Okay. Ms. Haney, I'm sorry, but I think we wanted to make sure everybody had the language in front of us.
So putting the language difference aside, which we're fine with, the House version or the Senate version, whichever, the issue that we have and we are asking you to consider is a 15-year duration extension that is in the Senate position as opposed to the 5-year extension that's in the House position. And the reason that I would suggest to you that the project needs and perhaps even deserves that much of an extension, and we do understand that that's asking a lot, although we have done it before. There are certainly plenty of other examples. But this is a very small TIF district in West St. Paul. It's the area being developed by the Dakota County CDA is called the Gateway Area of West St. Paul. It's South Robert Street and Smith. It's over by the Cherokee Sirloin Room, if you've been there. Most of us have been there more than once. Again, it's about 3 acres in size, and it produces about $200,000 of increment every year. So it has taken a long time, admittedly, to get as far as they've gotten in terms of the beginning of the development of the district. And the reason it's taken so long is because they have not used eminent domain. There are a number of very old buildings and businesses in that area, and they have acquired a number of them voluntarily through the business when the business is willing to be sold. And then they've spent money on relocation, and they've spent money on demolition in order to develop this whole area. So they've deliberately created a district that is very small, that doesn't have extra land, that becomes sort of the cash cow for development. They've got a 3-acre, very small district. The buildings that they acquired, the businesses that were located there, it was a pawn shop and a couple of other things. These were like early 1900s buildings. One of them even had horse stalls in it. So these are old, dilapidated buildings. They've acquired, they demolished. The end result will be in this 3-acre little area that they're developing, and they're in negotiations with a developer. It'll be about 132,000 square feet of a mixed-use property on the 3-acre parcel. It's a small project by most standards, but again, it's important for that area, that gateway area of West St. Paul. And you know, I would just urge you to consider that they really need the whole 15 years. It's a total of a $3 million budget for the whole project of the next phase. And I've got kind of budget details if people want more information than that. But thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments from committee members? Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Haney, if the legislature did nothing, those increments right now, they would go back to the units of government to lower property taxes. And so if I was a resident of West St. Paul and I said, why don't you let that go back to the local units of government, what would your answer be?
Representative Davids, you know, it's always a difficult question, isn't it? Because what they would get is a little bit more property tax revenue today. They'd get the increments $200,000 a year spread over West St. Paul, the portion that they get, versus what the CDA, the city, the county are trying to do in terms of getting rid of these blighted old buildings and improving the area with new facades, new buildings, a couple new businesses. That granted, you're waiting a number of years before you reap the benefits of it, but that is the point. And so I think that both the county and the city, that's why they decided it's worth the investment and the wait to invest that money into redeveloping that area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Haney, do we have any estimates as to if we go forward with this, and let's say we went with either the 5-year or the 15-year, how much more would be collected at that point? What's projected to be the extra that would be collected?
What I've got in my, Madam Chair and Representative Davids, what I've got in a budget is showing $30,000 in taxes per year on the new building that would be part of this future development, should you grant us the 15 years or even any extra years. So I would really like the leeway, though, to verify that, to make sure that that's a complete number for you. But that's what they've got in their budget right now in terms of taxes paid prospectively.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Haney. And we can talk about that. We're not taking any action tonight. We can get some numbers around. But then it begs the question at the end of the, let's say it went 10 years or 15 or whatever the number is, then what would stop the county and the city from coming back in saying, you know, we got some other good ideas, we want to continue this now?
Ms. Haney.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, there's probably nothing to really stop them, but maybe some good common sense that it probably wouldn't be a good idea here at the Capitol. But, you know.
Because, Madam Chair and Ms. Haney, of course, in 15 years, you and I will still be here, so we'll be watching.
Please don't.
We'll be watching.
So.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And to Chair David's point, I think the argument could be made on every TIF proposal. But I think we look to local control here, and I'm wondering, I ask, I don't remember, is there a resolution, a formal resolution from the county board and also from, or the CDA and also the city of West St. Paul, Ms. Haney?
Madam Chair, there is a formal resolution from both the county board and the board of the CDA, which is the county, those are the county commissioners, right, and the city of West St. Paul, their city council.
Right, and so we do typically let them do this within limits, and I understand that Chair Davids has a threshold that, you know, makes some sense for him in this position. But I am supportive, and as we have been in the Senate, of allowing local folks to make decisions like this when they've had public hearings and have given some consideration to it. So I think those are the interests in making the decisions before us. Other questions or comments from members of the committee? Are there other folks here that would like to testify on this provision for the Dakota County Community Development Agency?
Thank you,
Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Haney. We'll move on to, to Oakdale. And Senator Wieger is here, and we also have Bob Streeter from the city of Oakdale. And if you would let us know the specific article and provisions, I think it'll help us. Senator Wieger, do you have that information?
Madam Chair, I don't have the specific article for Oakdale, and if staff could draw your attention to that.
We'll pause for a moment, Senator Wieger, and we'll make sure that
Article 4,
Article
Section 4 in the House.
Page 20, members of the side-by-side comparisons. City of Oakdale. Everybody with us now? Okay, Senator Wieger, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Chair members, we're very appreciative that the Oakdale proposal, which is also referred to as the Tanners Lake Redevelopment Tax Increment Financing District, is included in both bills, and it's a very small difference. The extension date in the Senate would go until December of 2017, the House until December 2015. Otherwise, everything substantively is the same. A very brief background, the Tanners Lake project is just about 5 miles from here. You go down I-94 east and right by the world headquarters for 3M in Maplewood. Across the street is Tanners Lake on 120, and this was a blighted area, and thanks to you in 2008 with the original TIF district, the city has been able to make a great deal of progress, but because of the downturn in the economy, they need a little bit more time, and you've seen the wisdom in trying to get this done, and this would give them the needed time to accomplish a number of projects. Representative Slawick's been the chief author in the House, and we have the city manager, Craig Waldron, here. And I'll also mention the community development director, Bob Streeter, is here, Representative Lilly, and we have others. And finally, we have resolutions unanimous from the county, the school district, the city council, as well as some other civic groups.
Thank you. And thank Representative Slawick, welcome to the Senate Tax Committee and the Tax Conference Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a very important project for Oakdale, and it will allow them to develop this property, as you know, at no cost to the state. So hoping this can move forward with a longer extension.
Thank you. And Senator Wieger or Representative Slawick, you want to have another testifier on this? And could you state your name for the record, sir?
Yes, Madam Chair. Craig Waldron, City Administrator for Oakdale. And essentially, this had been a major redevelopment site for us, as was pointed out. It's across from 3M. It's on an urban lake. And we were making good progress, and it's just when we hit the bad economy. One of our developers ended up backing out, and we weren't able to move forward. We think as the economy gets better, we'll be able to get this properly addressed. We just need some more time to get it done. Thank you.
And can any of you speak specifically to the two-year difference? Why 2017 instead of 2015?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Waldron.
We thought we were going to be okay before when we had the 3-year time limit, and it took much more time than we thought. And if you end up with somebody basically falling out of the deal, you almost end up starting all over again. We're comfortable with the longer Senate time frame, that we could get it done within those particular parameters as opposed to having to come back and maybe ask for a couple more years again. So it's just kind of a belt and suspenders approach that, you know, virtually ensures us that we'll have the time to get it done.
Thank you, Mr. Waldron. Questions or comments for the folks from Oakdale? Seeing none, is there anyone else here that would like to testify either for or against the provisions here? All right, then. Folks, thanks for being here this evening. We appreciate your testimony. Next, we have the Bloomington TIF provisions, and there were two of them in the Senate bill. Were there also two in the let's see if we can find those provisions. Members, they are on page 23. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Bill Griffith. I represent Mall of America. And a couple of quick comments, and then I'll turn it over to Shane Rudling and Mark Fable. The first is with regard to the term of years. It seems to be a theme tonight. One of the things that we studied carefully is the nature of the project as a phased project. You may recall that the original project was built in a single construction project, and the expansion is really a series of projects. Some are underway as we speak tonight, and others will be constructed 5, maybe 7 years down the road. And so it really is a back-end loaded model. And so if you cut off the tax increment halfway through the project, then you actually cut off about 70% of the revenue, because it really comes in the later years as we reach full build-out. And at the all total, the projects are estimated to be $1 billion in expansion of that very successful project. So we don't want to undercut the project as it's getting underway and building to its full potential. The other two comments are really technical. The consent required by the school district and the county is one that we were well aware of, because it's in general law. And if you take a provision and a requirement that's in general law and you put it in special law, then you leave bond counsel wondering, why is it showing up in two places? Did the legislature mean something more of this special law provision than it did for the general law requirement that we approach and get the consent of the school district and the county? So we're really trying to avoid that kind of technical hurdle or trip hazard as we're going to issue bonds and meeting with bond counsel. The final comment is with regard to the but-for test. There's an additional but-for test in the House version that's not in the Senate version. That but-for test was made at the very beginning of the project. There was a blighted stadium project that was removed, as you may recall, many, many years ago. That test and that requirement has been long satisfied. And so to impose that now as an additional requirement to this TIF district and no others essentially sets up another hurdle and potential trip hazard in trying to get bond counsel to sign off on the project. So these projects are difficult to do in the best of times. We've demonstrated with the construction that's underway that we can pull it together, but we're trying to eliminate those things that cause a project to be delayed or not financed. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith. And Mr. Rudling?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Mark Fable with McGough Construction. I'm speaking on behalf of Bloomington Central Station, a high-density mixed-use development that the TIF plan was approved and the project started in 2005. Initially following that approval, we built about approximately $100 million of development, which was renovation and a housing project. And since 2006, the completion of that first phase, we've not been able to move forward with any projects with the slowdown of the office market and the collapse of the residential for sale market. The assessed value in the available increment for our project after it was originally approved decreased by 41%. At the time that our project was originally modeled, our project worked. Losing 41% of our available increment has completely frozen our project, and right now we are stopped. We absolutely need the 7-year extension to be able to have a viable project to continue to move forward with. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Fable. Mr. Rudling, yes, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Shane Rudling with the City of Bloomington's Port Authority. I'm here tonight in support of both the Mall of America request and the McGuff request for Bloomington Central Station. The city supports the Senate version of the bills. They are originally authored, and those are the versions that have been approved unanimously by the City Council and the City of Bloomington Port Authority. And so for the reasons stated by both Mr. Griffith and Mr. Fable, the city supports the Senate version that does not have the additional requirements that are in the House version and contains the longer durations of the TIF districts that make these two projects viable that go into the future, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Mr. Griffith, do we have the consent of the school district and the county at this point?
Mr. Griffith.
Madam Chair, members, no, at this point, that is a requirement in general law that typically follows the approval of both the special law and also the approval of the council. And so those are two steps that we would have to accomplish before going to the county and the school district. There have been informal discussions at both levels, but no formal consent because it would be ahead of the legal requirement.
Mr. Griffith, would it be a complete bar if they didn't agree?
Yes. In any of these, it's my understanding based on general law that in any of these extensions, that is required. And in our case, certainly it's required and would be a complete bar to the project.
Questions or comments for the folks from Bloomington?
Madam Chair.
Senator Michel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this is for Mr. Griffith. Do you want to just comment on the, I know Mr. Redling talked a little bit about the duration, the length here. You know, what is the difference between the two versions in front of us mean for these projects?
Madam Chair, senators and members, the difference in the project is about, I have a sheet here that I've got to kind of total in my head, but essentially it's about 70% of the revenue. Because in year 10, we're fully built out, and we reach the maximum kind of sustained level of TIF. And so 70% of the revenue is approximately $50 to $55 million that would not go into the project. And these are funds that are used, of course, for public infrastructure, for parking, for roads, for bridges, for utilities. So we would not be able to build that critical infrastructure. The city wouldn't be able to issue bonds necessary for that critical infrastructure, and the project simply wouldn't happen.
Senator Michel.
Thank you, Madam.
Other questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for either one of you, but what the process at the city's Port Authority then, that's, you've been all through that, all the hard questions have been asked. You know, the infrastructure is going to cost what it's going to cost. I mean, everyone's satisfied that those are the right numbers and city's good to go?
Madam Chair and members.
Mr. Redling.
Madam Chair and members, the City Council and Port Authority have studied these two projects more than any other projects that we could conceive. They're very well versed in how the projects work and how they're funded. The council approving both of these requests unanimously, and the Port Authority is our other governing body for the TIF districts approving these once again unanimously. We feel they've been properly vetted.
Madam Chair and Mr. Rudling, the city gave us some good testimony showing how, you know, once Mall of America was built, there were so many other additional projects that came into Bloomington that didn't require TIF. And, I mean, is that still in the future? There are more of those kinds of things that will happen as a result of this?
Mr. Redling.
Madam Chair and members, certainly. I think the testimony that Representative Runbeck is referring to in particular is that Bloomington has about 8,000 hotel rooms today. When the Mall of America opened in 1992, we had about 3,000 less, so about 5,000. Certainly all of those cannot be attributed to the Mall of America, for example, but some of them certainly can be. So those develop, most all of that development is not within any sort of TIF district. It wasn't publicly assisted. So combined with the type of development that we've seen elsewhere, including office development, like what is projected and exists at BCS, feeds those hotel rooms, pays, you know, income taxes, property tax, and all sorts of other revenue sources that the city and the state rely on.
Senator Michel.
Madam Chair, just a clarification. So going forward, I mean, the next, does Bloomington have a lot of room to continue those, that kind of expansion?
Mr. Redling.
Madam Chair and members, the South Loop District in Bloomington, where the Mall of America development and the Bloomington Central Station development exist, as well as four light rail stations and the state's busiest transit hub at the Mall of America, is where Bloomington will grow. And we have a master plan for that area. We intend on building that area out to a less suburban and more urban type development. And we're in the process of working with a lot of different parties and stakeholders to make that a reality. So there is room for growth there. We're projecting that. It's in the Met Council plan.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You had mentioned earlier that you had done a lot of extensive studies on this to begin with, but in 2006, we kind of had an indication of that the economy was kind of in the tank at that point. You know, what kind of projections did you do going forward to really have a good idea and accurate picture of what you were going to be able to do and achieve through this TIF district? And, you know, has that panned out based upon your studies, and what kind of methodology did you use? What did you look at when you were looking at this to make sure that this would be viable when you first did it?
Mr. Redling.
Madam Chair and members, in 2006, the Bloomington Central Station development was, the master plan had been approved. The Reflections condominiums, the 263 condos, were nearing completion. The Mall of America at that point was in the midst of approving their master plan for 5.6 million square feet. It was probably the height of the irrational exuberance phase. A couple of years later, in 2008, when things were dramatically different, you know, there was a reset and everybody had to rethink. Bloomington Central Station's development since then has seen their TIF revenues decrease, so we continue to analyze both phased projects and it readjusts the public improvements and the private improvements for both projects, and we continually do that. So they're not static. There isn't a massive single-phase development like Mall of America was the first time through that we can bank on. But what we have been able to do is build projects like the Radisson Blu at Mall of America during that recession and be able to prove to the development community that public-private partnership between the developer and the city and the Port Authority and a lot of other groups, the county and so on, all the way up to the federal government with RZF bonds, for example, at the Radisson Blu, that there's a lot of effort that needs to happen to make development happen in tough economic times. We can do that. We can do that in the future in this area.
Gentlemen, this is a project I'm very excited about. I think that it represents thousands of jobs for the state of Minnesota. And I think that, unfortunately, Commissioner Franz might be at a disadvantage. I'm not sure if he had a chance to see all of the beautiful plans and visit the Mall of America and their offices and see what they were intending with this. And I'd be curious, Commissioner, if you've seen all that and if you know, is the governor supportive of this proposal?
Madam Chair, well, thank you. The governor has certainly been very following this project closely and is very supportive of the expansion. And one of the questions that I had, because this is very helpful, I appreciate the questions that we've had tonight. One of the questions that I had, I did not get a chance to see the offices, but was sort of the analysis, Mr. Griffith, about the but-for analysis here, because this is an unusual site in the sense of a major project. And what is it about? I mean, we understand the recession was a problem and kind of got everyone's plans sort of sideways, but what is it now that you feel in your analysis requires the TIF process to have the development go forward? Is it kind of the one question that I had, Senator?
Mr. Griffith?
Madam Chair, members, Commissioner, we've done extensive work with the city modeling what could be built at various levels of tax increment. Actually, I would say about years worth of work. And we've retooled that modeling recently to reflect the recession and the changes. But essentially, the major difference is the but-for test comes into play with the end product. So if we do not have the type of infrastructure investment to support a massive development of up to 5 million square feet of expansion, then what you would see, if you could imagine IKEA, and you do that two more times, that's essentially the end of the line. So the difference is a couple more IKEAs or the project that is on the boards, and it's actually underway with the Radisson Blue in the next phase. So the difference in that is about a 5-to-1 ratio in terms of tax base, in terms of jobs, in terms of taxes to the state. Everything that goes into the project is a result of the infrastructure that the project is built upon, parking, roads, bridges. Mr. Rudlake can talk about a project that is starting this year to lower Lindau Lane to create a plaza, which makes the expansion possible. That's a key piece of infrastructure that's actually going forward. And so we want to be able to build on that infrastructure investment and really realize the potential. So for every public dollar that goes into the project, 5 or 6 private dollars go into the project, thus creating kind of a flywheel concept and really satisfying that but-for concern that some people have raised.
Madam Chair, thank you. No, I appreciate the opportunity to ask questions and learn more about this project, because it is an opportunity for jobs I think we're all very much concerned about and want to see go forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions or comments for Bloomington? Folks, I appreciate your being here. Thank you for your testimony tonight. And I hope if you come back, and when you come back, you bring those beautiful drawings again, because I think they're very impressive. I love what you're going to do with Lindau Lane, and I'm very impressive.
We'll do that, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. We also have tonight Apple Valley. They are page 20 in the side-by-side comparisons.
Good, she didn't hear that. What page?
Page 20. Representative Max, Representative David's here, was wondering, where is Apple Valley?
On the spreadsheet.
Oh, sure. Well, Representative David's, I welcome you to come down and have lunch sometime at our wonderful establishment, the Galaxy Diner. You would thoroughly enjoy Apple Valley, I guarantee it.
Representative David, that's a good invitation.
I'll be there. Tax tour.
Tax tour. The Senate tax chair would like to come, too.
Excellent. You're invited also, Senator.
Thank you. Apple Valley is here. We have Tom Lowell. Did I say that correctly, Mr. Lowell, the city administrator, and Bruce Nordquist, the community development director, both here. Mr. Lowell, would you like to begin?
I would, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. We hope to be brief and keep you on your schedule. We've been asked tonight to address the differences between the House bill and the Senate bill as it relates to two separate projects that we're working on in Apple Valley. I think the common refrain tonight is that the economy has certainly slowed down a lot of development that people have been working on, and I think that's true in our case as well. I would point you to two different places in your side-by-side handout. The first item involves the extension of the jobs bill as it relates to Apple Valley. On page 19 in your side-by-side, you can see that the House language for the jobs bill economic development extension takes more of a global approach, would extend that on a statewide basis for 18 months across the state. The Senate version currently is actually on page 24, and that is a city-specific provision for Apple Valley alone that extends it for 12 months. And Apple Valley can live with either of those options. We are attempting to do two projects in our community. One has certainly been held up by the economy. Would bring 200,000 square foot facility to our community on 37 acres. It's been frustrating a little bit because we have a number of petroleum pipelines that need to be lowered as part of this project, and we'll be extending one of the major roadways in our community through this area once these pipelines are lowered. That has certainly added to our delay in this project, and that's why we need the extra time extension for at least 1 year in order to get this project completed. So as it relates to Apple Valley and the jobs bill extension, either on page 19 or 24, we can live with either of those options, the city-specific bill or the statewide extension. And the second issue we have before you tonight is found on page 20 of your side-by-side. This is the Apple Valley language that relates to gravel mining, reclamation of land that has been actively mined. Again, there's two different versions of this, one statewide approach and one Apple Valley-specific approach. And I'd like to ask Mr. Jim Casserly to go through the details of that.
Thank you, Mr. Casserly. Welcome back to the committee.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The Senate version takes a statewide approach and is general law. And the city would be very comfortable with that approach. Creates a soil deficiency district and a mining reclamation project area And again, it's applicable throughout the state, and we can certainly, it works very well for us. The House version is a little bit different than the bill we actually introduced. And in the House version, it creates a local bill, and it requires that 80% of the acreage that's going to be within this reclamation project area have certain conditions, and then it gets into how each parcel must have a certain percentage of those relevant conditions. Well, the problem is that in the House version, those percentages are a little bit high. We don't need a lot of change, but we do need to have those percentages, one reduced from 80 to 70 and another reduced from 70 to 60. It's really that straightforward. I took the liberty of circling the two numbers, and I can leave them with staff. But that's also in the House version, they created a sunset. We had originally proposed 10 years, and they made it 5. We can, you know, if the House version's adopted, we'll live through that. So the Senate version works for us. The House version will work if we could just have two small adjustments in those percentages. And we're most appreciative that it found its way in both bodies. So,
thank you, Mr. Casserly. For my colleagues in the House and others, the Senate wanted to take a broader approach to this issue with the mining reclamation because there are other similarly situated projects. I think it was Savage and Maple Grove was another one. And so we thought it made sense to have application statewide. And Mr. Casserly and Ms. Haney and our counsel, Eric Sylvia, who's not here this evening, he's not well, but all worked together to develop this statewide approach to the reclamation language that is in our bill. And I would like to speak for having a statewide approach so that we don't see these on an individual basis year after year, but instead have a general authorization statewide. And I think you may have been working on that jobs bill extension for that same reason, but I'll let Chair Davids address that. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned Apple Valley, where we're at now. We have Maple Grove coming up, and you mentioned a third one. I wasn't aware of a third one. It was Savage or Shakopee?
Yeah.
Or
Mr. Chair, there's not currently a project that we've heard before, but there are similarly situated mines and properties that would benefit from the same language if it were made available to them. And not just in those areas, there are others as well that we're aware of. Other questions or comments for folks from Apple Valley on either? Oh, well, I guess there are four provisions in front of us this evening. Questions or comments about any of those provisions? All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, and Mr. Casserly, Ms. Haney. Thank you so much for your work on that property reclamation. Thank you. The City of St. Paul has made a request to speak about the CIB provision. You know the Ms. Erickson.
Bill.
Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you.
Hang on just 1 minute, Ms. Erickson. We're just going to find the right
26.
Page 26. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
The City of St. Paul has a CIB, a capital improvement budget program, that we have to come and ask for authority for. We've had it since 1971, and we ask for extensions every 10 years, and the authority is up in 2013, so we are here asking for an extension. Both the House and the Senate granted us extensions, and I want to say thank you for that. That's the priority for the city, that the authority gets extended. We also made an request to increase the bond amount from $20 to $30 million. The last time we made that request was in 2003 when we increased it to $20 million. The Senate, in this case, increased it to $25, and the House kept it at $20. Again, the priority is the extension, but we really appreciate the Senate adding that flexibility.
Thank you. And Ms. Erickson and members, I personally was not a fan of that provision, but there are other members of the Senate that I'm sure that would defend that position, and perhaps one of the other, my other colleagues might like to comment on that provision or have questions or comments. No? Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Ms. Erickson, I think the big thing is the extension of the time from 13 to 24. How big a deal is the money? I mean, if it's left to 20, is that the end of the world? I mean, are you even going to get close to getting there, or where are we in that? I think the time's the important thing here, but how critical is the number?
Ms. Erickson.
The number's not overly critical. I don't believe it would be the intent of the city to come back to ask for any flexibility until we would have to come extend the authority again in 10 years. So it just allowed for us to be able to move over the next decade with this authority. But again, the priority is the extension, and that's what's in both bills.
And Ms. Erickson, the city is currently nowhere near the $20 million, if I recall the testimony correctly.
Yes, for 2012, we're only at $6.1 million.
Mr. Chair, or Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Erickson. So if we get the years out there and we're going into the 10-year period here, let's say it's 6-7 years down the road and you're getting closer, you could always come back and say, hey, we need to take a look at this.
I plan to be here in 15 years, too, so.
I'll be here, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Erickson. Can you just give us an idea of how much in bonds are you paying off every year?
Ms. Erickson.
From just this authority, in 2012, we've issued 6.1. In 2011, we issued $15 million. In 2010, there was 11. In 2009, there was 4.5. And that's
issued. Madam Chair, those were the Senator that was the amount issued?
Yes, we have the... Yes, excuse me, Ms.
And then
Chair.
Sort of on
we'll
an annual
slow down
basis,
for the record,
Madam
because your voices might be...
Oh, I'm sorry.
...overlapping here. Representative Runbeck.
So, Madam Chair, what I'm just curious about then, on an annual basis, how much, you know, what dollar amount of bonds are being paid off?
Is Ms. Erickson.
Kind of corresponding numbers? Or
Representative Runbeck.
I would have to get you... I don't have in front of me right now the total amount of bonds we pay off every year. I know the amount we have authorized and the amount we let, but I can get back to you with that information.
All right. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You had mentioned that this is just the one area. Is there another area that you can issue capital bonds then to?
No, this is our CIB. Yep, this is what we do. Oh, I apologize.
It's for the record.
Yep. No, I apologize.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Erickson, any big projects, any big improvement projects on the docket that coming down the pipeline?
Ms. Erickson.
There are always projects that we do in the city. A lot of these deal with fire stations or road improvements or bridge improvements. A lot of this we use to gap finance. We have a public committee that meets that are appointed by the mayor and the city council, and they go through and put together a list of projects. And so there's always... projects coming down the line.
Other questions or comments for Ms. Erickson on this provision? All right, Ms. Erickson, thank you very much for your testimony tonight.
Thank you.
Members, we have three more. We have Patty Nauman from the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities and Jen O'Rourke. Maybe you can both join us here at the committee table. Gary Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities. We have a pinch hitter or a switch hitter here. Ms. Nauman, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, we shall have a few provisions that we'd like to provide testimony on, and on one of those I have with me this Jason Arswold, who is the Community Development Director for the City of Brooklyn Park.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, where are we at?
Senator Chamberlain, they are testifying generally, I understand. If you want to speak to a specific provision, you'll let us know where we're at in the side-by-side, Ms. Nauman. Thank you.
Madam Chair, the first provisions that I'd like to speak to are House Article 4, Section 1, and I'm sorry it was on a different part of the side-by-side. I believe it's on page 19 of the side-by-side. The two provisions, House Article 4, Sections 1 and 2, that deal with the extensions for the TIF jobs bill from 2010. And I'm also offering testimony for the League of Minnesota Cities. I know Mr. Carlson's here to answer questions as well, but we do support that additional extension of 18 months. I do want to add, and I think we've said this before, that these were not initiatives that we sought this year. We did get the one-year extension last year. We recognize that this is something that the legislature does not take lightly, but we do support having the additional time in the interest that, due to the economic recession, cities have had a very difficult time making some of these projects go forward. We did survey our cities, and I know the League did as well, over the summer to find out which cities were actually using these provisions, and we got a very good response in terms of cities that either had used the extension or would like to use it. So we just think this is some added flexibility in a time when economic development projects are having a very difficult time continuing to move forward.
Ms. Nauman, to that point, we did an extension last year, and we did a 12-month extension. So is the House provision then adding an additional 18 months to the 12 months, making a total of 30-month extension from the 2010 jobs bill?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
And Ms. Nauman, do you have a list of the cities that would make use of the new 18-month extension?
Madam Chair, what we did... I don't have that specifically, but I think I could get close enough, and I can bring it to you. I don't have it with me here tonight. But when we surveyed our cities, we did ask both the question of which cities had used the extension and which cities would like to use it if it were extended. So I think that would be – we didn't say 18 months. We didn't have a sense of this at that point. But we did ask the question about whether – if it were extended, if they would use it.
Well, and I know last year when we passed the extension for 12 months, we had a list of the cities that had projects that were ongoing that needed that extension. And I think that information would be helpful for us for consideration going forward.
And then, Madam Chair, on that same page, the Senate Article 4, Section 3, which modifies the definition of redevelopment districts to require that 50% or more of the buildings be structurally substandard. That is a change from more than 50%. We do support that change. We think it adds clarification to the statute and obviously provides a little bit more additional flexibility. So, and I'm speaking for the League as well, that they do support that additional change. While we're still on this page, and I'm going to turn, we've got a couple more provisions, but while we're still in the area of tax increment financing, on there's House Article 4, Section 3, and Senate Article 4, Section 7, and I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Arswold from Brooklyn Park to talk a little bit about the differences there and our support for the Senate language.
Thank you, Mr. Arswold. Welcome back.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Jason Arswold, Community Development Director for the City of Brooklyn Park. As Ms. Nauman said, the item that we're talking about is the additional pooling as it relates to foreclosures, bottom of page 19. And this is something that had passed last year. We are one of the cities that happened to attempt to use that authority to recover foreclosed homes in our community. As a result, and through that process, we found it difficult to follow the statute that was laid out. And so because of that, came back with some recommendations. Most of those recommendations have been incorporated into both versions, the House and Senate version. There is one provision that does differ in the two as it stands today, and that relates to this idea that in any case, none of these homes could be acquired until all of the foreclosure process has been completed. One version asks that that there be a 6-month waiting period. We were actually asking for that to be reduced. We asked to eliminate it initially, but understanding some of the concerns of the bodies, that was increased to 30 days. So what we were hoping could survive here into that is the 30-day provision, which allows us to recover homes more quickly and result in better outcomes for these homes, not having to wait 6 months past the time when they've been vacated by the previous occupants. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you. Questions or comments on any of the topics here before us, this panel? Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, members, I'm just here to answer questions and help out if Ms. Nauman needs it. She has one other section she would like to address.
Ms. Nauman.
Sorry. Madam Chair, members, on page 6 of the side-by-side in the property tax article, the House provision section 28, which provides for an additional 2 years on the holding of property for economic development. We do support that provision, again, in the interest of giving cities a little bit more time to work on economic development projects that are having a hard time getting moving due to the economy. I believe that the Senate has a similar provision in its technical bill that provides for the 1 year, and I just want to say that we do support having the 2 years that is provided for in the House bill, and I know I'm speaking for the League of Minnesota Cities as well in that support.
Ms. Nauman, you just made Representative David's night.
Thank you. I'm glad to do that.
They support the House position. Awesome.
Any other questions or comments for these folks? All right, then the only other testifier we have on the agenda, and others will be welcome as well, is J.D. Burton. Mr. Burton, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is J.D. Burton. I'm with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood. I'm here on behalf of the city of Moorhead. I'm referring to House Article 1, Section 30 in the House bill, which is page 6 of your side-by-side. This is a provision that would help border cities that suffered from flood damage in 2009, 2010, and 2011 to compete for new housing construction with North Dakota and with other areas. This is a continuation of a program that the state passed as a tax abatement in 2009 and 2010. That provision has now expired for new construction. This is no longer an abatement. It's no longer will be state paid. It is a tax exemption issue, so there is no cost to the state. And I believe actually the fiscal note, the spreadsheet, has a $15,000 savings for the state as a result of this provision. This is basically a competitive tool for the border cities. With the behemoth that is North Dakota to the west, looking at going as far as eliminating all property taxes through their constitution, this is a critical tool that helps our communities compete and develop new housing construction. The 2009 and 2010 provision was a significant help. Thankfully, there wasn't another major flood event this year, but the flooding itself has created an impression that future events could make it difficult for people to look and choose these areas as a place to build new homes. So this is a significant boost. It helps the communities compete, and hopefully it is something that the legislature will see fit to continue for the communities. Thank you.
Mr. Burton, we've asked other folks, where are the county and the school boards or the school districts with relation to this proposal?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the city has been working on the provisions of this language with the county. There is no official resolution that's been passed by the county or the school board, but the city anticipates that because this will have a significant impact on the housing construction, that they would be supportive.
And similar to what we had before, would that be a bar if the schools and the county opposed this? Would that be a bar to your moving forward?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I can't say. Frankly, if the county, at least in this area, opposed it, that would be a significant surprise considering they worked on us with the legislation. I can't say if the school board opposed it that it would stop it from going forward, but it certainly would require us to look at another way to try and compete for housing up in that area.
Thank you. Other questions or comments for Mr. Burton? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And Mr. Vanosik also indicated he wanted to testify this evening. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Whitman. I'm the county assessor from Martin County, Minnesota, and I'm here on behalf representing MAAO, which is the state assessor's organization, to speak in opposition to this same bill that you've just heard about on page 6.
On the Moorhead proposal?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to address that disaster home exclusion provision. It was originally a very successful state disaster aid program where the cost was picked up by the state of Minnesota. And then, as was just stated, that aid has expired. So instead of extending this program for 2 years with state aid, this provision that you're talking about creates a property tax exemption through change to values of the properties. MAO opposes exemptions, exclusions, deferments, limitations, or artificial value adjustments because they make the property tax system more complex, less accountable, and it creates a lot of inequities between taxpayers that we have to try to explain, which is always very difficult. This exemption is up to $200,000, and it can be applied to market value of new improvements, newly improved properties, and it results in the unequal treatment in the valuation between like properties. So because it affects the value, it also creates inequities in the property tax paid by owners of similar properties in the area. Unequal or inconsistent treatment is always hard to explain to the taxpayers. As I said, for us to try and explain why two properties not being treated equally is always very difficult. The amendment provisions are not limited to properties that were damaged in the flood. These are new properties that are coming up after the flooding has occurred. And some land that was vacant prior to the flood can be improved with new homes or apartment complexes and then qualify for this exemption. Old homes can be demolished and replaced with an apartment complex or a new home and receive this exemption while their neighbors have no adjustments to their taxes. The amendment allows a city to pass a resolution to participate in this exemption program, and then the difference or the loss of the tax base results in additional taxes that would have to be paid by non-qualifying homeowners, businesses, and farmers in other parts of the city or township, school district, and county. Other cities or townships that chose not to adopt or could not adopt the exemption program would still end up paying the additional property tax because they did not choose to participate. And finally, the amendments language pertaining to improvements to existing structures will be extremely difficult to explain to taxpayers. For instance, if a homeowner spends $30,000 on a new kitchen and finds out it only added $5,000 of value to the home, by our assessment practices, the result is that they would not qualify and meet the $10,000 minimum and would not qualify for the exemption. The results are very similar to the old unsuccessful phased out this old house program, which was also less transparent and more controversial. Madam Chair and members, the state paid disaster program worked, and it should be extended if it is still needed. And short of that, we do not, due to the fact that the reimbursement from the state has expired, the authority should be granted to the county to abate these programs rather than creating this new exemption.
It was Mr. I know you're from Martin County, but your name again, sir?
Dan Whitman.
Mr. Whitman, thank you for your testimony. A question for you. I'm trying to understand.
Sure.
If there are exemptions for certain taxpayers because they were affected by floods, then there would be a shifting of that burden to other taxpayers. Right? I mean, isn't that the bottom line here?
It would be an inequity, yeah. But two similar properties just wouldn't be treated the same. And so that would be a loss of tax base so that someone else would have to make up that difference.
And if I might, I'd like to ask Mr. Michael a question because Mr. Sylvia isn't here this evening. And if you wouldn't mind, sir, a question about whether we've ever done this before, because it seems to me precedential. It would be a new precedent for us to provide property tax exemptions to essentially provide additional flood relief. I'm wondering, have we ever done that as a state prior to this?
Mr. Hines,
maybe?
Madam Chair, as testimony provided that we did indeed have this program for Moorhead and some of the other cities in place in 2010. So we did have a similar program, although that was state paid. So it was similar, but not exactly the same thing. I don't think we've ever done anything exactly like this. We do have programs in place to assist disaster-related properties. This is not really related to flood damage properties per se. It's areas that have had flood damage in them, cities particularly, but it's not really designed to help properties themselves that were damaged by the flood. It's just that the area was subject to the flooding.
So if I owned a home in the area but it was not affected in any way by flood relief, I would still get this exemption. I would still qualify.
Madam Chair, remember, it's only for new construction or new improvements.
Yes. Right.
But yes.
So I want to improve my kitchen. My home has not been affected by flood damage at all, but I happen to be in the area. I can shift some of my property tax burden to some of the other property taxpayers in my community.
Madam Chair, correct, if the city approves the program, which there is that local approval aspect of it as well, but yes, you're
thank correct. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Are there questions or comments from members of the committee or other folks that would like to testify either for or against this provision?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen. Mr. Whitman.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I don't think we probably had an opinion because it was outside of my jurisdiction, but I don't believe that we would have been opposed to that because it was a state program that was providing aid rather than a tax policy.
Mr. Vanosik.
Madam Chair, Rob Vanosik on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And Mr. Hines, kind of to clarify what was set up in the special session the fall of 2009 dealing with the floods in the southeastern part of the state created this program where the county would abate and then the state would reimburse and created this disaster aid program, which has worked very well. It was not an exemption. It was not a shift of valuation onto everybody else within the jurisdiction, the taxing jurisdiction. So we completely support the existing program, disaster aid programs that are on the books that have worked well in southeast Minnesota, southern Minnesota, central Minnesota, northwestern Minnesota, but this is brand new, this creation of an exemption for disaster homes.
And it sounds like a secondary relief program. The state had one that it provided, and now we're trying to continue more relief, but now it's a shifting within the local community of the property tax burden.
Correct. And to Mr. Whitman's point, it would also, and to your point, Madam Chair, if I'm in a home that was never damaged or it was vacant land and I went and built on vacant land or had an existing home and added value to that home, redoing the kitchen, what have you, I'd be shifting my tax burden onto neighboring properties even though I was never affected by the flood.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
And so my question is, how important is this to be competitive with a neighboring state and for the town? Is this an important tool for them to be
And I was hoping to have Mr. Burton come back again to talk about the goals here and the purpose and answer Senator Rosen's questions as well, Mr. Burton.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, in short, this is an incredibly important provision for the city of Moorhead. To compete with North Dakota. We certainly appreciate the concerns that the assessing organizations have raised, but when you are dealing with the specific unique situation that you are in Moorhead, which is not only the floods and the ramifications of those floods, but also the North Dakota property tax system and the competitive system in North Dakota, the community is struggling to compete in any way that they can for new housing construction in particular. So this is very important in that regard. And then to the point of shifting with the taxes around, as Mr. Vanosik has alluded to, that would exist here under this type of a scenario. But if you assume that those homes would not have been built and the new tax base that's generated by these homes and all the investments that the community has already put in into land and infrastructure and likewise, those homes would be reaping the benefit of that new tax base from those new home constructions. So in the end, the city believes that this would have a net positive benefit for those communities that may not have benefited directly from the tax exemption. So, again, to your original question, this is a competitive issue for border cities, particularly the city of Moorhead, and it will have very strong ramifications if it isn't continued.
Senator Rosen.
Senator Rosen. Chair, I would like the opposing opinion on if this is a huge tool for
Mr. Vanosik.
As Mr. Burton alluded to, there is a huge competitive advantage in North Dakota on their lower property tax rates levels, but the state of Minnesota has an existing, I might not get the name exactly right, the disparity reduction area, which is a program that is set up for those border cities to help reduce their property taxes. We believe, and that's in the form of I'm not sure if it's an aid or a credit, but we support that method of delivering that assistance in being competitive with the neighboring state.
Well, and I think we're talking about the disparity reduction aid, and let's just clear that up first. But that's a property tax
business
aid. Is it only for businesses or for residences as well?
The disparity, Madam Chair, the disparity reduction credit is designed to lower the effective tax rates for businesses. This provision deals with the new start housing construction, so they are completely different programs.
Well, can I ask a question about? Oh, I'm sorry, I was going to get to Representative Anderson. I'm sorry. All right, then my question is, if this is about competition, but you're just shifting the property tax burden from certain homeowners to others, then how do those others continue to be competitive? Or are you trying to say that the stimulus with the encouragement of the improvements and the construction are what allow the community to be competitive? I'm not sure I understand when you say that this is about being competitive. How does that apply?
Madam Chair, the competitive side of it is certainly with the one-to-one with North Dakota. Dealing with the other homeowners who are already existing, who aren't new construction homes, the fact that these new homes that would benefit from that are increasing the tax base for the community, that would have a benefit for the overall homeowners in totality.
Are you saying you're encouraging the growth and the improvements in these areas, and that the exemption is only for a couple of years, and by the time the exemption is over, the whole value of the entirety, all the market value, will have gone up?
Madam Chair, it's the city's belief that if the new construction is incentivized through a program like this, the totality of the benefit across the tax base will have benefited from that.
Well, the concern I have, Mr. Burton, is that if I want to build or improve my kitchen and send the bill to Senator Rosen, who also happens to live in the community but isn't part of the program, that doesn't seem exactly fair to Senator Rosen. And I'm not sure how my shifting my tax burden to Senator Rosen makes the city of Moorhead any more competitive with North Dakota. I don't understand.
Sure. Madam Chair, it does simply boil down to the aspect of attracting those new home construction, those new improvements there, to compete with the programs that North Dakota already has, like an improvement program like this, like an exemption program like this already. So it's just trying to match as best we can with what North Dakota is doing in the West Fargo area in particular.
And they're doing that because of flood relief?
Madam Chair, in North Dakota, I can't speak specifically to why those initiatives were proposed in West Fargo and Fargo, but part of that may have been with flood relief initially. Part of it just may be because it's of a different philosophy that they have in those communities.
And so you're trying to be competitive with their property taxes, their property tax burden.
Madam Chair, we're trying to be competitive in all sectors, that including this one.
Well, what about the proposal in North Dakota to eliminate the property tax altogether? What do you do then?
Madam Chair, that's a great question. I'm going to have to get back to you.
I'll look forward to your answer, Mr. Burton. Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Burton, just refresh my memory a little bit. I recall in tax committee when we heard this provision, the issue was the construction is going to happen no matter what. It's just a matter of is it going to happen in Minnesota or if it's going to happen in North Dakota. That's correct, right?
Mr. Burton.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the expectation is that there will be more of an influx of people coming, that they will be deciding to choose whether they live in North Dakota or in Moorhead, and that without this exemption, developers will be looking towards North Dakota on a probably larger percentage than they would in Moorhead.
Okay, and Madam Chair, Mr. Burton, it's, you know, looking at kind of a long-term strategy of having people settle in Minnesota and being able to capitalize on those property taxes on a long-term basis, correct?
Mr. Burton.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Okay. And as you highlighted, the North Dakota votes in June, I think it is, on the whole idea of not having property taxes at all. So I can see that being a major concern for a border city like Moorhead.
Sure. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of surprised that a statewide organization would have interest in something in a border city like Moorhead. What, Mr. Burton, do you know what the Clay County Assessor's position is on this issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I don't have direct communication, but it's my understanding that they have been working through with the city of Moorhead on this issue, and without having a specific note from them, it's my understanding that they are supportive of what of this provision.
So, Madam Chair and Davids. Mr. Burton, the Clay County Assessor is fine with, but the statewide organization is taking a position against something that the Clay County Assessor is fine with. Is that correct?
Mr. Burton.
Madam Chair, Representative, again, without having a specific note from them, but that would be, if that is the case, that would be what is happening here.
Well, and Mr. Burton, have there been any kind of public hearings about this among the residents of the city of Moorhead that might be affected so that those in Senator Rosen's position, in my analogy, would they know?
Madam Chair, there is a requirement in the legislation that a resolution is passed by the community. So at that point, if there is going to be a public hearing or discussion, it would be then.
Mr. Vanosik. To that, you were first. Yeah. Chair Davids.
No, I just wasn't done. I had a couple of questions.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Chair Davids.
You know, as far as the test of have you had public hearings and so forth, I mean, the TIF issues that we've been talking about, you know, certainly shift a lot more than what this small project would do. And my concern on this and why I support Representative Lanning on this and the city of Moorhead on this is because, as I think Chair Ortman and Chair Anderson have said, I thought it was in November, but if it's in June when North Dakota takes that vote, and if they vote to get rid of their property taxes on homesteads or homes and businesses, that whole side of the state, the whole northwest corner, is in a world of hurt. And I think that what the city of Moorhead's looking at here is very reasonable, and I think it's something we need to do. And in the long run, those homes hopefully are on there longer than any exemptions are going to get, and they'll add, you know, increase the base. But I think the northwest corner of the state is in a world of hurt and is going to need a program like this and may even need to be expanded down the road. And like I said, I am very surprised that a statewide organization would care about one county when that county seems to be just fine with it, the assessor of that county. Now, maybe I don't have all the information, but, you know, the discussion will continue. But I think we need to help out in this area all we can.
Mr. Vanosik.
To that point, Madam Chair, this is a half dozen different cities that would be fall under this, from Breckenridge down and maybe Traverse County, over a wide number of counties. And it's only the counties that are, or the, sorry, the cities, these six cities or so that are able to pass this resolution and then and hold the public hearing at the city level. But it's only the folks within that city jurisdiction that would be eligible for the program. So if you are a resident in another city in that county or resident of a township either in that county or just sharing a school district, tax shift that's occurring here within whatever jurisdiction a homeowner in Breckenridge is deferring their taxes, that's going to all residents within the school district beyond that city's jurisdiction into the townships, into neighboring cities. So the decisions of these individual cities are affecting residents outside of that particular jurisdiction through the county and the school district taxes. As far as why the Association of Assessors is concerned about this is It's part of our mission statement to oppose all shifts, exemptions, things that make the property tax system more complex. When you have a house A and house B, they're across the street from each other. They're identical properties, people go and look at their tax bill and their neighbor across the street got some special deal, some special program. They get real caustic about why aren't they getting to what's government doing to me? And if we're going to be kind of transparent and accountable about this, they should sue, and I understand they looked at it, but do the honest accounting and do an abatement. I understand. We all understand an abatement. You actually have to pick that up on the bottom line and pay for it and raise the levy a little bit. And so we believe the property tax system should remain more transparent, more accountable, and people should know what's going on rather than these property tax shifts through exemptions and exclusions.
If they did the abatement, Mr. Vanosik, they would do it one property at a time in the Board of Equalization, and that would be a much more visible process and a more direct method for providing tax relief. Mr. Burton, what do you say to that?
Madam Chair, the communities had looked at abatement. Certainly the existing law was a state-paid abatement. The communities did look at abatement, continuing that being locally paid. But because of the cost that would be incurred upon the county and the others to assume that, this was a local arrangement that was worked out with the communities as something that they could handle. The two-year time limit was put as a reasonable measure to keep it capped. And so this was the chosen method to keep all the local units moving forward and keep it competitive.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, refresh my memory. Isn't this the one that has a specific FEMA designation?
Yes.
I believe that was in the legislation. And the city has to elect to participate. So if you have a specific FEMA designation, I would assume that entire area is probably wiped out, and the chance of having across the street a house that is not going to be in that FEMA designation or flood damage is probably pretty slim. I don't think it's a hit and miss. I think this is pretty widespread flooding situation.
Maybe we need to hear about what the area is. We've been referring to areas
right.
through this conversation, and Mr. Burton, do you want to identify for us?
And also,
Senator Rosen?
Wasn't it Senator Bach's amendment? Wasn't it just an amendment? And so we didn't really have a very good discussion about this.
Senator Rosen, I'm not sure it was on the floor.
It was on the floor. Oh, it wasn't in the committee.
Mr. Burton.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen. Yeah, yes, Senator Skoy had offered amendment in committee that he withdrew.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. The three FEMA designations reflect the three floods from 2009, 2010, and 2011. Because the other provision, qualifying provision of the statute, is with the Border Cities Program, essentially the only counties that would qualify are Clay, Polk, Wilkin, and Big Stone. So it's those communities that were within those FEMA designated zones and Border Cities by statute would qualify for this program. So it's very limited just to those communities.
Mr. Whitman, response to that?
I believe it's... Is it not correct that it's just the cities of East Grand Forks, Moorhead, Dillsworth, Breckenridge, and Ortonville? It's not the rural areas, it's just the cities?
Madam Chair, yeah, the Border City Statute designation is just those cities. So those cities plus the FEMA designation qualify. But again, because those two are tied together, the only cities that would qualify would be the five that were mentioned, correct?
So there's an overlay there. So you have to be in both the FEMA district and within those border cities that are already pre-qualified under Minnesota statutes in order to do this.
That's
Mr.
Correct.
Whitman.
And that's how we would have homes that are right next to each other, one in the township, one in the city, who would be right next to each other and not one qualified, one doesn't.
Because only the cities qualify and the townships
correct.
Don't qualify.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if I might, that's correct. However, when you consider that in Clay County, 88.5% of the total residential new construction was in Moorhead, the vast overwhelming majority of these homes are actually in the city of Moorhead. So while that is correct, the large majority would be within would qualify under new construction.
Right. Well, I would say we've heard quite a bit on the subject, and I think we all have learned quite a bit this evening. Other questions or comments from members? Or is there anyone here that would like to testify either for or against this provision or about anything that we've heard this evening? There is Mr. Arsvold from Brooklyn Park was hoping to come back. And just to let folks know after that, I'm planning to adjourn unless there are folks here that want to testify about other provisions. So if you were here to testify tonight, please let us know right away. Mr. Arsvold, welcome
Madam
back.
Chair, thank you. Jason Arsvold, Community Development Director, Brooklyn Park. Just very briefly, on page 24, Brooklyn Park does have a special bill in for a project, which is a redevelopment of a vacant hotel property into an aquatic performance and wellness center and a new hotel. And there are two parts to that. There is a five-year extension to the existing TIF district, not an extension to the district itself, and those provisions are similar in both bills. There is a difference, however, in the authority to spend increment from existing TIF districts or the jobs legislation that had passed. One of them is specific to this project and this site, and the other relies on the general law for this purpose. And I just wanted to point out that either or would be workable for us for our project. It is just our hope, and I wanted to point out that through your deliberations, we hope that one or the other makes it in there as far as this is concerned for our project. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arsvold. Questions or comments about this provision? Or is there anyone here that would like to testify for or against the provision? Seeing none. All right. That was the agenda that we had for the evening. I don't have any further comments, but Representative Davis would like to make additional comments. Well, I reserve the right to comment about your comment.
Oh,
however.
Boy.
Go ahead, Representative Davis.
thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just say as we go into the future meetings here for the TAC Conference Committee that people should be prepared because we could call a meeting as early as tomorrow. But please just watch your emails, and they'll be properly posted.
With that, and seeing no further business this evening, we are adjourned.